Welcome to Optimal Health for Busy Entrepreneurs, the podcast for busy and high-performing entrepreneurs and leaders who are looking to create more energy and optimize their health while upgrading their brain and personal performance with precision. I am your host, Julian Hayes II. I've been involved with health and performance for over a decade. This podcast was created for the high performer who is unapologetically ambitious, the one who moves at a fast pace and operates with an edge, the one who wants to become superhuman. Nothing here is fluff, gimmicky, or feel good. I have little to no interest in simply helping you improve your life. I want to help transform it. By listening to this podcast, expect to have a body that feels just as good as it looks. Expect to possess a swagger and style that gives off an infectious vibe. Expect to command the stage or any boardroom you walk into with your executive presence. And lastly, expect to become your most enhanced self so you can live a limitless life. Now, let's get to the show. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Optimal Health for Busy Entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Julian Hayes II, and I have an awesome guest with me today, someone whose products I am thankful to have stumbled upon a few years ago. My hair is thankful, and my barber was very happy as well that I started using these products. So I am joined by none other than Michael James. He's the founder and CEO of Frederick Benjamin. Michael, how's it going, man?
It's going great. It's going great. Happy to be with you.
Yeah, man.
And like, happy new year.
These products here, I have a few because we'll be on YouTube, so I have a few here. But yeah, man, I love your products, and I love the attention to detail that you put into those. And so I'm excited to talk about that. But before we look at the present, let's go all the way back to the past real quick. And what are one to two lessons from childhood that has shaped you into who you are today?
Yeah, that's a great question. From childhood, I think, you know, one is just how you treat people, I think, you know, with dignity and respect. You know, I grew up in the Deep South in South Carolina. I was privileged enough to go to a private school where I was one of very few African Americans. And so I know what it, you know, is to always have eyes on you, to feel like you're the oddball out. And so, you know, I think that kind of taught me a lot. And you know, in treating people and making them feel comfortable and not like ostracized, if you will. I don't know. Randomly, that comes to mind. I think, but that's something that that's Southern genteel spirit is kind of, you know, followed me to the mean streets in New York, but I think that's one. And then, I think childhood, you know, I was an athlete growing up, and so I hate to lose and I'm very competitive. And you know, even to today, I look to sports to keep that competitive edge and keep me sharp. And so I think, you know, maybe those two things would come to mind, but that's a good question. I've never been asked that before, but that's what comes to mind.
Yeah. And I always, you mentioned about losing. So what, and I love to ask this sometimes. So do you hate to lose more or do you like to win more?
Well, I love winning. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I don't mind losing because it just like recenters me. Mm-hmm. And you know, reminds me that I need to go sharpen the tools just to make sure that I, you know, keep sharp, keep competitive. But, yeah, I mean, I'd like the feeling of winning. And so I would stick, you know, kind of stick to that.
Yeah. I think mine's losing. And I'm still kind okay. I'm still kind of a sore loser. I don't like losing. So I think mine's losing, but I think they both have their benefits. So it's kind of it's a hard question to kind of answer sometimes because there's benefits to both of them.
Well, you're off to a fiery start, man, because that's two great questions. And again, I haven't thought about that. But now that you say it, I still stick with my answer, but I've done a lot of losing, in my life, especially with this business, small losses. But, I think I have, what has changed over time is the way in which I kind of accept those losses as, successes, if you will, right? So being able to learn from that, is a win in and of itself. So I think there's always a lesson in losing. It humbles you. If you're not analyzing those losses and really critically thinking about all the little details that could have led to that loss, then, that's a real loss, right? Because you're not learning from that loss to then set yourself up next time for the win. I mean, and again, that goes from just daily losses with the business. I don't play basketball anymore because that was my sport, but so I'm on the golf course and I get competitive there. And I can always track back to a hole or decision that I made, to club up, club down, to pull out the driver thinking, you've got this vast land and I totally missed. So again, I always go back to those holes and those selections of clubs or tools that, were at my disposal at a given point in time that could have delivered a different outcome. So I guess I would see both of them as wins as long as, you really analyze those losses.
So before Frederick Benjamin, what were you up to? What's some of your backstory?
Yeah. So, how far back do you want to go? But before Frederick Benjamin, I was in the beauty care space. I worked for L'Oreal as well as Revlon, managing brands such as Mitchum Deodorant, Aome, Colorstay Cosmetics, Mazzani, and Biolage. So I've got a lot of domain expertise that kind of set me on this path. But even before that, I spent 2 years in the United States Peace Corps in Kenya as a small business advisor. Prior to that, I was on Capitol Hill, went to Morehouse College. And that's kind of my long journey, if you will.
So working with, I think, L'Oreal and Revlon, what are some of the big keys that you took from that experience to bring into your company?
Yeah, I think by no means did that set me up for wild success. I mean, I quickly realized my shortcomings, once I jumped into entrepreneurship. But it did, set me up for a lot of success in terms of just sheer management, knowing how to critically analyze, strategize and look at a business opportunity and quantify that. I got really good at product development, working with chemists, cross-functional leadership, working with all different functions in order to drive a team. But, I would say, so that kind of set me up, but, being an entrepreneur takes a lot more, grit and intel and the like to really grow a business. So, don't get me wrong. I mean, having that experience on my resume made it a lot easier to talk to whether it be my family or initial investors to have comfort, if you will, in writing and stroking a check in order to kind of, bring this idea to life.
So when you were getting ready to make that jump, did you feel any like resistance or tug and pull from kind of, when we think about a job, we kind of have a guaranteed income that's coming in, we kind of have a little more certainty. Whereas in entrepreneurship, especially early on, there's a lot of uncertainty. And sometimes those closest to you can maybe bring some doubt unintentionally by like, you sure you want to do this? And what if this happens? What if that happens? Did you have any of that?
Oh, yeah. All the way through, you know, from my mother, who is an entrepreneur herself. I mean, I'm a third generation entrepreneur. She took over my grandfather's business. She eventually sold it, but she was not really pushing me or encouraging me to make leap of faith. She was like, you know, made it to New York. You've got a great job. Why in the hell would you want to leave? To, you know, friends that are investors in the category, right? And when I would tell them what I was thinking about or up to, or even give them a sample of a product that, you know, I'd been working with on the side, you know, I would get, you know, guys aren't into products. Nobody would ever buy it. I mean, all, you know, so it wasn't pushback, but it was like throwing a lot of doubt in my head. But I, you know, there was just, again, I mean, I you know, I can look back and say that my experience with L'Oreal and Revlon helped me critically evaluate the opportunity. So I knew what I could see in numbers that my mother or my friends could never see, you know, from the inside out. I had the numbers at my disposal. I looked at them 10 ways to Sunday, and it just felt right. Now, it took a lot longer than I expected, but, you know, if you talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, most things do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I, you know, I had headwind like from day one. But, you know, again, I just, again, it's that competitive spirit in me that just, you know, took what they said with a grain of salt and fueled me to, you know, to push on even harder. And it was this one guy that I just asked to look at my business plan. And it was the stroke of a check from him that then brought my, you know, my mother on and a few other angel investors to say, okay, I think this guy's serious. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, there's headwind all the time.
Yeah. And I think that's the same. It's the same thing that happened to me too. When I decided to make my leap is it's the same things. Like, you sure you wanted to do this? You sure? So, so that's good to hear. And a lot of times entrepreneurs, when we kind of the work we end up in is to scratch a personal itch. So is that the same with you and Frederick Benjamin? Did you start it? Did you get the initial idea of something that you would need yourself?
I did. But I mean, again, I'm a third generation entrepreneur. So I always had like this thing about becoming an entrepreneur. I didn't know what it was for a long time. You know, and I went to business school and I really got into brand management because, you know, that was the closest thing in business school that folks said was close, you know, closest to becoming an entrepreneur because you're running a brand within an organization. But again, I've always had that itch. So yeah, I mean, I think it was scratching an inch, like this, that itch, that light bulb went off and said, you know what, this is not only is this the idea I think I've been looking for, but I've got a personal connection. And also I've put in my 10,000 hours, right, in mm-hmm. order to, I believe, like capitalize on it.
Yeah. So what do you think about, because I hear this a lot with a few friends that they feel like they're interested in being an entrepreneur, but they don't just have that idea yet.
Okay, what?
They feel like being an entrepreneur.
But they don't have the idea.
But they don't have the idea yet, but they know that there's something in them with that entrepreneurial DNA. What do you, any advice for that? How do you think you can go about finding like your idea or your thing?
Yeah, I think it'll come. Right. Mm-hmm. You can't force it. Right. And so if that is the case, then continue, you know, storing cash away because you're going to need it. And just, you know, really let it come to you, right? Because there's one thing to go after an opportunity just to make money, but there is another thing to go after the opportunity, not only to make money, but with real passion, right? Because there's going to be a lot of bumps in the road. There's going to be a lot of naysayers, there's going to be a lot of headwind. And so if you don't have that passion and you don't have that drive, right, to get you over those, you're going to quit, you're going to lose money, and you're going to be off to the next thing. And so I would just say, like, be patient. You know what I mean?
It's a hard thing.
It is hard, but I mean, only patience to really figure out that right move, mm-hmm. and then go after it with all the gusto you have. And, you know, sometimes, you know, even if you can't find it and you're losing a little patience, then perhaps, you know, you should hop onto some of these entrepreneurial sites where you can network and become a co-founder, mm-hmm. right? You can hop on and add your energy onto an idea that you think is great and become a co-founder. I don't know, but it hit. Mm-hmm. And then that just instant grip came into being and I just went full steam ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that. And so I'm curious now, we were looking at your products here, that there's no parabens. That's a big thing. And grease-free and a lot of other things. And I'm curious about when you're making products, like how does that go down?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, a couple of ways. Like one, we take a problem solution approach. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, there's got to be a problem that I'm solving, right? Because there are a lot of products out here that are just cosmetic, you know, that add a little gloss or do a little bit of this, do a little bit of that. But, you know, those seem to kind of come and go with the next trend, but we really focus in on an issue. We understand that issue, like dry scalp is our first, kind of segue into the market. We really understood what was causing dry scalp with men of color and then figure out how we can make that better, right? So for us, and again, this is also kind of taking a few questions back where my industry experience really helped, right? Because I was able to see what most mass market brands were using in their products that was causing that particular issue, whether it be dry scalp, razor bumps, you know, dry, coarse, curly hair. And it was, you know, so you had guys going to the supermarket to buy, you know, a shampoo for dry scalp, but it was that shampoo that was drying out the scalp, right? And so, you know, being able to dissect that, right? And, you know, I could pick it out in a minute just reading the ingredients. And so, you know, so once you have kind of that problem, then, you know, I just sit with the chemist and say, this is what I'm trying to solve. And this, you know, and I start with, you know, a lot of people ask me what's in the product, but I, you know, to your point, I start with what's not in it. And mm-hmm. even with the chemist, we can't have X, Y, and Z. Now go figure it out. And so, so it may take a little longer because I've given them that kind of mandate that we just can't have these ingredients. But that's, you know, that's definitely the approach that I take.
Yeah. So when you mentioned that it took longer to get going, that's probably one of the reasons why, because it's a very precise formula, because it's the first time that, like, I look forward to shampooing and conditioning. Cause you have that spearmint, you have like a spearmint and all of that in there. So
yeah,
that's very interesting.
Well, that, and then you have to start layering on, right? Mm-hmm. So once I think I've tackled the actual issue, now I take the next step. I mean, again, this is just with me to really provide an experience for the customer, right? And so to your point, you get that cooling mint sensation. So when you feel it working, there's additional sensorial cue that said, wow, okay, I can tell the difference between what I've just purchased and what I've been using. And then also, you know, so we try to touch on all the senses as well, right? The feel, and also, you know, just the sense, you know, we stay away from synthetic fragrances, you know, in our hair care. And we looked at active natural oils to give that clean, refreshing aromatherapy scent, right? That, you know, that doesn't conflict with a guy who wants to wear cologne after he gets out of the shower. Because the last thing we want our customers to do is have, you know, this cloud over his head where he's got these two conflicting scents. It just doesn't work. And so, you know, there's multi layers, but again, we start with a problem solution approach, and then we build regimens versus single products in order to address those needs.
Yeah. So where do you think that some businesses who are trying to be direct to consumer as well, especially in the area of beauty and products like that, where do you see them kind of making mistakes in terms of introducing products to the marketplace?
I see a lot of copycats, right? And you know, you really should approach this with your own secret sauce, whatever that is. I get a lot of calls from entrepreneurs who want advice, and what I find is they've been iterating, going back and forth for way too long. You know, they let perfection be the enemy of the good. It's a mistake that I made, but I'm definitely have overcome that, right? And so, so that's definitely one. It's like you got to get it good enough, and then let the market speak, right? Because you can continue on this path, thinking you're making it better, and then once it gets to the market, the feedback could be totally something different than what you've. That you had this conversation in your head. So just over iterating, over analyzing is definitely one as well. And also, you know, starting too big too soon. And I get a lot of folks that I speak to are making products in their sinks or in their bathtubs or whatever. And I tell them, so they want to know, figure out who should I contact to make our product. And you know, I tell them, you know, one, I ask if they have the volume, but two, just encourage them to continue doing it till you just can't do it anymore. Because once you start moving outside of the base, everybody wants to eat, right? And so you just start, margins start chipping away. And then, you know, that cash could be reserved to actually building a brand. So I would say those are kind of, I mean, there are a lot of mistakes, but those are kind of some of the most common that I come across and just speaking with other entrepreneurs.
And so as you was building this at the very beginning, how did you, I guess, get that initial momentum, that initial set of customers?
Yeah. You know, I took that Paul Mitchell approach where I just went door to door, barbershop to barbershop. My thing was I just come out of L'Oreal and their professional products division. And that's solely marketing to the salon. And at that time, after spending, you know, all this time in salons, getting them to use products and services, but also retail, you know, another kind of light bulb within this whole much brighter light bulb was the fact that, you know, there was an opportunity for barbers to get back to that traditional barbering, right? Where customer comes in, hair is getting wet, with a shampoo service, you know, there's a hot towel being administered, there's a hot lather shave. And so I started to see also a growing number of barbershops beginning to elevate their services. And that was my first entry, right? So just going straight to them, selling, you know, just a piece of each so they can try it. And then they start calling for larger orders and larger sizes. And at that point, it was, you know, I kind of figured, I think I have something here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I I can see that because, like I said, when I was living in New York for that year, I first discovered the products inside the barber shop when the barber recommended that I use this because I had a head full of dandruff.
Yeah. What barber did you go to? Who's your barber?
Oh man, I forgot where, but it was, it was in Harlem. It was in Harlem and okay. Maybe 125.
Was it Levels or something? Yeah, Levels.
Maybe it's on one. I think it was 125th down, maybe closer to this first or second. My geography's bad, but, I forgot his name. Oh man.
Oh yeah.
But it was down there. I think they had a handful of barbers in there and it was an older gentleman that told me to look at this.
And okay. Try it.
Yeah.
It could have been B. Braxton or something like that.
Yeah. Level sounds familiar though. So it might be that, but I don't remember, okay. So I did notice though that, like I said, and I think this is probably you intentionally did this, that when you first started, I think you had like a core products, right? I think you had the hydrator, the shampoo and the conditioner, right?
Shampoo and the conditioner. That's right.
And then, so how did you decide what to introduce next and when?
Yeah. A couple things. When is when I could actually move at a rapid clip the three products that I already had. And what was when guys would just start asking for a pomade. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of knew, again, with the category experience, that if you don't launch with a pomade, like you're not really participating in the men's hair care space or grooming space. But if I go back again, you know, my approach was let's solve a problem. And the real problem that I saw was a lot of guys with dry scalp and hair. And so I wanted to first kind of give them a clean slate, correct that issue, make sure there's no scalp and hair, and then finish that look with the pomade. So it took some, you know, it took maybe a year or two before coming out with that pomade, but I kind of had it in the, you know, in the back of my mind, but I started to hear from customers or, you know, requesting that there be some sort of styling product.
And so let's talk about like business right now. The landscape, it's different for a lot of us. And I'm assuming it's a little different with you as well, because it's, to me, it sounds like you did a lot of business face to face and with things being closed right now. So what adjustments have you had to make with how you go about business?
Yeah, well, I mean, luckily enough, the adjustments were extremely minor. We'd gotten to a place where we kind of maxed out on, there's a couple of things. One, we kind of maxed out on the barbers that would buy into something like this, mm-hmm. right? And so before we go into a barbershop, we needed to see a couple of things. Let me let the siren go by.
Like old times, being in New York, sirens always
right?
coming by. Reminds me of good
times. It's always coming by. Yeah, but so we kind of exhausted those high-end shops that were offering those high-level services. That's one. And then two, it just got to be what we found was the areas in which we really worked hard, we started to see internet orders coming from those areas. Because not only were we trying to sell into barbershops, but we were also trying to convert barbers into being retailers, right? So not only did they have to manage the chairs and the booth renters and what have you, but now we were asking them to do something in addition to that, which was managing stock. And that's not what they do, right? And so there's a lot of out of stock, which kind of drove the business online. And then it online got to be so busy, we kind of took our feet off the street, reallocated resources, and just, you know, really started to focus on, you know, online. We still sell in the shops, but the majority of our business now is online. And so we made that transition prior to the pandemic. And then, and we were really amping it up over the course of the new year. And then once this happened, we really just turned up the spigot. And, you know, it's paid off for us. I mean, we had, you know, our best year yet this year. And so so we were kind of already on that direct-to-consumer path. But we're still open to barbers. They have their own kind of portal and their own process for ordering. But they do that now, just like our direct consumers come to the site.
Yeah, and I hope listeners listen to you describe that right there and don't miss a key aspect of what you did right there. You essentially, you know, at first, the first phase of the business was door-to-door bootstrapping, getting that initial momentum, and then you reiterated and almost turned over a new phase to take the business to the new level. So it's almost, it's the principle of what got you here won't get you there.
Oh, no, for sure. And I would say, I mean, to that point, because I was thinking about this today, is, you know, when you get to the point where you want to hire or allocate resources, you know, you allocate that or you hire for the now and not for the where you want to go. Because you may not get to where you want to go, and now you're burning cash trying to get there, right? Hire for the now, and then once you get there, you'll figure that, you know, you'll figure that out. And that's another, you know, kind of mistake that I had to learn the hard way.
What's some of the key advice that you're giving to entrepreneurs right now during this time, especially those who are not as established?
Yeah, I mean, right now, given where we are and, you know, pandemic and all these things, I'm telling them now is the time to ramp up your digital marketing efforts. I speak to a lot of them and everybody's pulling back. But I'm like, dude, this is when you should be full throttle, because people are at home, they're not moving around as much, and they're spending an awful amount of time on their cell phones, on their computers. And so if you can get in front of them with some, you know, decent content, decent imagery and great messaging, you know, you win. And all the shopping, I don't think the shopping has gone away, but it definitely has shifted to the online arena. And so, you know, I've had quite a number of conversations like that. And I just, you know, I listen, I let them tell me why they're pulling back and this, that, and the other. And they're legitimate. But, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, you got to make some, you got to take some swings at bat. You got to take some risk. And this is the time, like, you know, to cut all the dead weight and move those resources into digital marketing.
Yeah. And if you look back,
you got to invest. Yeah.
And if you look back into the 07, 08 range during that recession, I was still in college, but, a lot of today's biggest businesses got their start during that recession. And if you look at a lot of recessions throughout history, that's when these businesses got their started. So that's
it. Yeah. That's it. I mean, you know, again, it just comes down to, I get it. You got to pull levers, you know, and that's why you got to really critically monitor every dollar spent to make sure that you're getting the, you know, the right return, or you're analyzing the right KPIs. But you're right. Some of the best businesses that go on to do great things started in a recession. And I will say that we will see come 2022, 2023, some real unicorns that have been, you know, that were started in, you know, the year 2020.
Yeah.
They're out there and they're making it happen.
It's almost like you're planting seeds right now for when that boom is coming, because the pandemic around 100 years ago, the Spanish flu and all that, and then you had the Roaring Twenties after that.
That's right. No question. And then also, you know, again, I go back to, like, this is the time to start investing in digital marketing, because, you know, I think a lot of consumer habits are actually going to change even after we get out of this global pandemic, right? It's, you know, people just want to be shopping online more. and the, you know, the one with the best digital game wins the day.
That's true. You're getting in there, that meant that real estate in their head of that, you know, you're that for that particular niche, you're the person for that because they've seen you the most. And so I have to listen to that myself because I need to start ramping up myself when it comes to the content, digital content and everything. So, but yeah, so I hope listeners.
Yeah, what you're doing right now, I mean, I need to do more of that as well. But, you know, people are consuming more online content. We, before we hit record, we were talking about YouTube.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I mean, it's like, bang it out.
Yep. And so let's talk about your personal well-being. So what are some ways that you, I guess, take care of yourself on a daily basis and keep your sanity with so many moving parts? You know, you got family life, you got your personal well-being, and you got your business life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's something like this year I really is a goal to actually focus on me and my health and well-being mentally and physically. A lot of times I came second and I'll whisper that my family came third, you know, just because I was so into this. They're homeschooling now, you know, wife's in there as well. But I, this year, I'm really being aware of the things that I put in my body, you know, so I'm really trying to eat healthier, more plant-based foods. I started reading this book called The 5 a.m. Club, right? So I'm trying to, you know, get up at that crack of dawn to my meditation, make sure I get some exercise in and just a quiet moment to myself prior before jumping into all the customer service requests, all the, you know, just the day-to-day activities. And, you know, I guess seeing more doctors, really getting, you know, making sure that I get my visits in because, you know, that's something that I want to kind of promote within the brand. But, you know, I realized that I needed to do myself. I'm not like, you know, well, I am like most Black men, right? You know, I hate the dentist. I don't really like going to the doctor, but that's just something that we have to do. So those are some of the things, but that's, you know, interesting question. Cause that has been forefront in my head as we move into the new year.
Yeah. There's a lot of distrust or and re-education in that community. I noticed that during my time, cause I was in New York for medical school. I was at Toro up the street on 125th. And you know, we go out in the community sometimes and there's still a little hesitancy when you're talking about just routine exams and just health and nutrition and just those basic things. So, but yeah, so I think, you know, you're leading by example and that's part of what leadership is.
Well, yeah, I'm trying and but, I have a lot, I'm learning a lot. I have a long way to go, but I plan to share that as well, because again, you know, I'm in Harlem, I'm not sure what part of Nashville you're in, but there are true food deserts within our community. And so eating healthy is hard, right? It takes time, it takes prep. And so it's like, you know what? I'm just gonna go to this spot here, get this fried food and satisfy myself. And so, I could feel it in my body, like just slowing me down. It's working its way through my system. And so, you know, in order for me to really, like, I think, supercharge this business, I have to be supercharged myself. And, you know, one way of that is like really watching what I put in my body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a lot harder in Harlem and in New York in general here because. Yeah. That's one thing I got spoiled with during my time up there was any type of food I wanted, I can go get it whenever.
Yeah.
Things close early here. I have to plan to go get certain foods because they're not close to me. So I have to drive 30 minutes for certain foods. So it's a totally different environment. So yeah, food environment is huge.
It's humongous. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that's where I'm starting, you know, this year. Hopefully I can build on that and do some yoga. I'll tell you, last year I started out with a bang, right? I was in the gym. I had a trainer. I was going to yoga. And then the pandemic hit. And then I totally fell off the wagon.
Yeah.
Gained pounds, you know, eating chips all night, working and watching TV. And so, to the point where it was like, okay, this is not going anywhere anytime soon. And, you know, stepping on the scale, I was like, my clothes started getting tight.
Yeah. It's definitely an adjustment period. You know, I had clients last year where it was a big adjustment period in working with their health, because their whole day-to-day routines have changed. You got more people in the house. There's probably extra amounts of food in the house now that you don't need to eat, and just all sorts of things. So you had to really retweak a lot of how you plan initially to be healthy.
That's right. That's right. And it's hard because, again, I have two kids that used to go to school and take their snacks and lunch. And now we're having to buy lunch for them and snacks. And so I'm sitting there snacking right with them. And so, so it is hard, but, and with all this going on, it was just easy to kind of fall into a trap where I was drinking more and watching, you know, TV, snacking all night. And so now I try to stop, you know, not have anything but water after 8, try to get my meals in prior to 8. So a lot of that, is what's going into my thought process for like focusing on me.
That's awesome to hear. And so as we wrap this conversation up, let's do a few random questions. So what does success mean to you?
Success means, you know, for me, being able to sit back and see something that has truly touched people, you know, across the states and hopefully eventually across the world, and making a real impact along the way, whether it be from my team members, whether it be a customer that's used our products and can now hold his head a little higher, that I think that's real, you know, real success. I mean, I won't, you know, building, you know, a multi-million-dollar company, yeah, that's the goal. But if I don't get there, but I've changed a few lives in the meantime, I think, you know, I can chalk that up as some, you know, success as well.
And let's talk about music here. So who's your all-time musical starting five? They can be dead or alive.
So I have such a wide range of what I listen to. You know, if I go back, Michael Jackson for sure, Led Zeppelin, the old Kanye, I love the Commodores.
Okay, yeah.
You said five?
Yeah.
There's a lot of good music out there these days, and I'm really digging on. And again, I go across the board, and I love my Spotify. I mean, there's this new blues guy, Kingfish.
Kingfish, never heard of him. Let me write this down.
Kingfish.
Kingfish.
I'll email it to you. But then what is it? Kayantra? I'm really digging on now on their channel. Hang on. Let me get you this stuff. Because there's a lot of good music out there. I mean, if you listen to what it's called, Kai Tranada. Do you know it?
Nuh-uh.
Okay. Yeah. Kai Tranada. I think I'm going past five, but so, I mean, I listen to everything, like, I try to follow a pattern. I think that's one of those things that I'm trying to do this year, is really get into regimens. So I listen to gospel on Sundays. You know, I'm building a play. I'm discovering music all the time and putting it in playlists. So I listen to, you know, classic rock. I listen to blues, gospel, old school hip hop. I don't really like the stuff on the radio these days because they're really not saying anything.
Yeah, me neither.
The beats are like so simple. But if you really dig down deep into Spotify Discovery, I'm finding a lot of good stuff. So yeah. I would say that's my top five.
Yeah, yeah. I love Zeppelin. My best friend is a huge Zeppelin fan. And so he was my roommate in college. And so he introduced me to Zeppelin. I tried to act like I didn't like that rock and roll stuff. But then I really start digging it.
Good. Well, so it actually happened reverse to me. Like I was introduced to classic rock first and foremost before I listened to any hip hop. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was discovering music on my own. But I grew up in a household where music was always on. So the Commodore, Stevie Wonder,
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Wind, and Fire. All those classic guys were always, you know, Michael Jackson. You know, I would sit in front of my parents and, yeah, they'd have folks over and just perform all that stuff, you know, with my mind closed. But music is something that I lose myself in, like, on a daily basis.
Yeah, I do a lot of writing, and so I play music just in the background while I'm writing. So I love Spotify. And the next thing is, what are 2 to 3 books that have had a major impact on your life?
So Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun?
Oh, yeah.
Reginald Lewis. That I read that a long time ago. They just re-released it, but just, you know, I don't know if you don't know that book, All Entrepreneurs, Anyone in Business, please pick that up. And what else? So there was this there was a book called let me get the name. It was a book when I was really kind of stuck. And The Energy Bus.
The Energy Bus? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, by John Gordon.
Okay.
And it was just about this guy who was in a rut. He's having issues at home, issues on the job. He was stuck between the two. His car broke down one day and he got on this bus. And it was the Energy Bus. And it was all types of folks that had bigger problems than he did, or folks that were doing well. And he just was able to self-correct after having weeks and daily conversations with not only the driver, but with everybody on this bus. Mm-hmm. And it really got him back on path and changed his mindset. So those are the two books. But this book that I'm into now is, I think, it's going to be transformative. And so I dig into that around 10:30 every night, which, you know, takes me to bed. And that's the 5 a.m. club.
Yeah. Okay. 5 a.m. club.
And my daughter, who's 14, when I told her what book I was reading, she was like, yeah, I know that. I mean, I watched it on YouTube or whatever the case may be. And this is the first time I've ever heard it. So, I'm really getting into that as well.
Yeah. Awesome. And so the next question here is, let's pretend you have a glass, you know, a bunch of coffee, tea, water, or wine with you for a roundtable discussion, and there's 3 seats available. What 3 people would you invite to this roundtable? And it can be anyone throughout history. They can be dead or alive, and it has to exclude family and friends.
Wow. Yeah, man, you're good at this. I think MLK, Elon Musk, and who else? That's the last one. You know, on the tip of my tongue says my grandfather. I think I could learn a lot from him and his journey over the course of his entrepreneurial role. But MLK. I mean, Obama could also potentially sit in that seat as well. But off the top, I mean, I'm sure I can come up with others, but mm-hmm. I think off the top of my head, those.
Yeah. And the very last question here is, someone comes up to you, they tap you on the shoulder and they say, Michael, what are 2 to 3 things to do today that I can do to start becoming a superhuman entrepreneur? What would you tell them?
What you could do today?
Mm-hmm. To start that journey.
Oh, to start the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Take action on whatever it is you've been talking about or thinking about, like move it to the next step, launch it. What action? Like what should they do henceforth in order? You got to, guys, action is everything. Win, lose, or fail, you know. Invest, like put your money where your mouth is, because you'll never learn until you've actually, you know, invested in moving that idea to the next level. And get your product and you know, sometimes you got to give it away for free to get extremely valuable feedback in order to set you off for real success. So don't be afraid to take whatever you have and give it away for free, and really ask for critical feedback. Mm-hmm. The good, bad, the ugly.
Yeah, I like that. That's a great way to wrap this up. Michael, where can listeners find out more about you or Frederick Benjamin? Where would you like to direct him?
Yeah, so I mean, you can always check us out at shopfrederickbenjamin.com. You can find us locally in your Ulta store, Ulta Beauty store. You can go to our website, enter your zip code, and we'll give you a list of some of the closest Ulta stores, but also perhaps there's a barbershop, you know, near you. I'm on LinkedIn. Not on LinkedIn a lot, but I'm, you know, I am on Instagram. Hit us up in the DM and we can definitely start a conversation and move it offline. But those are some of the places where, we could connect.
Awesome to hear, man. And thank you again for joining me. This has been an awesome conversation. And everyone out there, stay awesome, be limitless, and go be superhuman. Peace.